Good morning and welcome to Simply Economics. It's Monday, April 22nd. On today's show, the Japanese ministry lowers economic views for three regions, and economists and statisticians battle over the soul of India's GDP data. Plus, UK rental costs rise at a record 9.2%. This coverage and more, up next. I'm David, and you're listening to Simply Economics. Welcome back to Simply Economics. We have a lot of important economic data coming out this week that will give us a clearer picture of where the U.S. economy stands. Here to break it all down for us is our correspondent, Michael. Let's start with the Commerce Department's initial estimate of first quarter economic growth coming out on Thursday. What are economists expecting to see?
Economists are forecasting that economic growth slowed significantly in the first quarter of this year, with GDP expanding at just a 2% annual rate. That would be down from 3.4% growth in the fourth quarter of last year and 4.9% in the third quarter. While consumer spending is still holding up and driving growth, high borrowing costs and persistent inflation are putting pressure on households and businesses.
And what about the labor market? We're also getting the latest data on unemployment claims this week. What's the outlook there?
The Labor Department will release its weekly tally of initial jobless claims on Thursday. Claims have been holding steady in recent weeks at around 212,000, which is still a historically low level. This suggests that despite some high-profile layoffs in certain sectors, the overall labor market remains quite resilient. And that's helping to support consumer spending, even as other parts of the economy cool off.
Finally, the Fed's preferred inflation gauge, the Personal Consumption Expenditures Price Index, comes out on Friday. What are analysts expecting to see there?
The consensus forecast is for the PCE deflator to tick up to 2.6% year-over-year in March. That would be a slight acceleration from February's 2.5% reading. While inflation has been gradually cooling from the multi-decade highs we saw last year, it still remains above the Fed's 2% target. And that's a key reason why the central bank has signaled it plans to keep interest rates elevated for some time to come, even as economic growth slows.
Thanks for the preview of the big economic data releases we'll be tracking closely this week, Michael. In other economic news, Japan's finance ministry has lowered its economic assessments for three of the country's 11 regions, reflecting a weaker rebound in production due to record inflation, the slowdown of the Chinese economy, and the effects of a recent major earthquake. For more on this, we turn to our correspondent. What can you tell us about these revised economic assessments?
The finance ministry downgraded its views for the Kanto Eastern region and the Hokuriku and Tokai Central regions in its latest quarterly report. Assessments for the remaining eight regions were left unchanged. The ministry noted that while the overall Japanese economy is gradually recovering, weakness can be seen in some parts. It cited risks like weaker foreign economies, high inflation, the Middle East situation, financial market fluctuations, and the impact of the January 1st earthquake in the Hokuriku region.
And what did the ministry specifically say about the Hokuriku region that was hit by that major earthquake?
The Hokuriku Finance Bureau said that while the impact of the earthquake remains, the region's economy is gradually picking up thanks to reconstruction demand and the positive effect of the recently extended Hokuriku Shinkansen bullet train line. Interestingly, the Bureau had kept the region's assessment unchanged in the previous January report, saying it needed more time to fully grasp the earthquake's impact.
Put this in context for us. What's the bigger picture in terms of Japan's overall economic trajectory right now?
Japan is facing some economic headwinds at the moment. Inflation recently hit a 41-year high, driven by rising energy and food prices. The Bank of Japan is under pressure to tighten monetary policy, but has so far resisted due to concerns it could derail the fragile recovery. There are also external risks, like the slowdown in China, which is a major trading partner, as well as the war in Ukraine, which has disrupted global supply chains. So while the economy is gradually improving, there is still a lot of uncertainty and regional variation, as highlighted by these latest assessments.
Thanks for that update and analysis. Clearly, Japan's economic recovery remains on shaky ground as it grapples with both domestic and international challenges. Speaking of economic challenges, a conceptual battle is raging in India between economists and statisticians over the accuracy of the country's economic data. Even as international agencies have upgraded India's growth estimates, some economists are pointing out flaws in how gross domestic product is being calculated, implying that the Modi government may be overstating growth numbers. Here with more insight is our Simply Economics correspondent. What are the key issues being debated here?
The debate centers around three main elements. First, economists like former chief economic advisor Arvind Subramanian argue there is a mismatch between seemingly robust GDP growth and tepid consumption levels, according to other government data, which he says points to serious measurement problems. Second, visiting Princeton professor Ashoka Modi and retired JNU economics professor Arun Kumar highlight discrepancies between the production method and expenditure method of estimating GDP. Ideally, the value of what is produced should equal what is spent, but Modi argues this is not the case and that the government is choosing the method that makes growth look better. Third, Subramanian also questions how India accounts for inflation's effect on GDP growth, looking at the difference between nominal GDP at current prices versus real GDP at constant prices, adjusted for inflation.
And what is the response from the statisticians? They seem to be pushing back on these critiques.
Yes, prominent statisticians, including two former chief statisticians of India, Pranab Sen and TCA Anand, argue that the economists may not fully grasp the deeper statistical methods being used. They acknowledge there are some problems with how India calculates GDP, but suggest the economists are focused on the wrong issues. Anant was directly involved in GDP measurement changes made from 2010 to 2018 that are still in effect today. While current Ministry of Statistics officials declined to comment on record, the implication is that the statisticians stand by their methodologies and calculations.
So it seems we have a situation where both sides agree there are some issues with the GDP data, but disagree on what those specific issues are and their severity. Is there any sign of this debate being resolved soon?
Not immediately. The statisticians appear to be doubling down on defending their current approach, while the economists continue to raise red flags. Noted economist and commentator Surjit Bala has also weighed in, but a full consensus remains elusive for now. Ultimately, this back-and-forth debate covers complex topics like consumption levels, expenditure measurement, household spending patterns, and the risk of the government artificially inflating growth numbers. With India's economic trajectory in the global spotlight, there will be ongoing pressure to ensure the GDP data is as accurate and reliable as possible. But it may take more time, and perhaps some independent expert analysis, to get economists and statisticians fully on the same page.
We'll certainly be tracking this important data debate closely. Thank you to our Simply Economics correspondent for breaking it down for us. Shifting gears now to another pressing economic issue, rental costs in the UK are rising at a record pace, with the latest data showing a 9.2% increase. This is putting a significant strain on renters across the country. For more on the factors driving this surge in rental prices, we turn now to our economics correspondent, Abby. Can you break down for us what's causing this record jump in rents?
There are a few key factors at play here, David. On the supply side, we have a chronic shortage of available rental properties. Construction of new homes has lagged demand for years, so the supply is very constrained. At the same time, many landlords have exited the market by selling their rental properties, further reducing the available stock of rentals.
And what about on the demand side of the equation? What's happening there that's contributing to the upward pressure on rents?
The main factor driving higher demand is the strength of the labor market and rising wages. As more people are employed and earning higher incomes, that enables them to afford higher rents. So you have a situation where demand is increasing while supply remains very limited. Basic economics tells us that's a recipe for prices, in this case rents, to rise significantly.
Is there any relief in sight for renters? Will this imbalance between limited supply and high demand start to ease?
Not in the near term. It will take time for new construction to come onto the market and boost the supply of rental properties. And as long as the job market remains robust, the demand side of the equation will remain elevated. So the upward pressure on rents is likely to persist for the foreseeable future. Ultimately, what's needed is a multi-pronged approach: incentives for developers to build more rental housing, policies to encourage more landlords to remain in the market, and efforts to continue supporting wage growth and employment to help renters manage the rising costs.
Thanks for that insightful analysis on the UK's record jump in rental prices, Abby. And with that, we wrap up our stories for today. Thanks for listening to Simply Economics. We'll see you back here tomorrow.